The following podcast is scheduled for one fall. One fall!
It's almost time for a new chapter of Geek Catch-Up to start. But before it does, Chris and I wanted to take a moment to send our love and appreciation out to all of you for choosing to hang out with us. If you enjoy Geek Catch-Up, then make sure to slam that subscribe button and help us level up the show by leaving a review on your favorite podcast platform.
You can also find us on social media to get updates on all things GK, interact directly with us, and content from the world of geekery. Geek Ketchup Podcast on Facebook and YouTube, at Geek Ketchup Pod on Instagram and Twitter, links to all of which can be found in the show notes below and on our website, geekketchuppodcast.com.
If you'd like to support the shoe, there's even links to our Square shop where you can find official GK merchandise like shirts and stickers. And Patreon, if extra content is your thing. Above all, though, the absolute best thing you can do is spread the love for the world of geekery by sharing the Geek Catch-Up podcast with your friends and family.
Now get ready to enjoy today's show, and as always, remember to stay saucy.
If it's nerdy, we're into it.
Gaming, movies, television, wrestling, comics, whatever. We are Kyle Eckert and Chris Heck, two lifelong friends with a passion for the world of geekery.
And this is the Geek Catch-Up Podcast.
What's good, Geek Catch-Up family? I'm Kyle Eckert.
And I'm Chris Heck.
And you are listening to Season 3, Chapter 46. Today marks a landmark chapter for GK as we close the book on a comic series that's been a true shining star on our pull list. That series is none other than Die. The fourth and final volume of the Image comic wrapped up recently, so Chris and I wanted to take a moment and discuss the finale along with the series as a whole. It's also a landmark chapter because we're bringing in our lifelong friend and fellow Die enthusiast, Alexander Blair, to discuss it with us. Alex, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, guys, thrilled to be here.
Yeah, man, it's been a long time to get you on the show. I think we've talked about a few different topics that we could bring you in on, but finally settled on Die the comic.
It's true. Going back to season one, it's probably for the best that I didn't get on any of the Star Wars opinions that you guys are going through. But, you know, I think we'll be a little more aligned and civil on this one.
That's true. Nothing gets more contentious than a group chat with Alex and I talking about Star Wars.
It's true.
It's a fact.
I've sat through many of them, and they get heated. They do get heated. But our history, you know, with Alex, we go way, way back to, I'd say, the fourth grade, back to the Mountain Terrace wrestling days. So, you know, way back when, and I believe you, what was your Mountain Terrace wrestling name? I don't know if you remember it.
Oof. Well, there were several. I believe at one point known as The Darkness.
The infamous The Darkness, yes.
Yes, The Darkness.
Prior to the hair metal band from the 90s. If you want to call them that.
That is true, actually, because we used to joke about that when they came out, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That particular wrestler did not believe in a thing called love.
True, did not.
It was quite the opposite, I think.
It's quite the opposite, yes. But the Darkness and Ace Magic were tag team champions several times over, as just the same as Chris Rogue and the Darkness were tag team champions several times over.
It's true. There's a lot of betrayals, stables, shattered, reformed in a five-man wrestling federation. A lot goes down.
It was high drama, and I mean, you never know, day to day it could change. You know, you could never believe your alliances.
It's true. And depending on the venue, whether it's a front yard, a basement, anything could happen.
True. I'm thinking the hardcore matches that went all throughout town, even in our small, like, mile-long town,
you know, in a kind of like a fourth and fifth grader sort of way, it was almost like the fights between Peter Griffin and the chicken, where they carry on, you know, like on top of like a truck, and then they're in the road, and they're going through a house, and then, yeah, that's the only thing I can compare it to.
I can only imagine what, like, the other adults that really didn't know, like our parents, were just thinking as they're coming in and out of the neighborhoods and we're just wrecking shit everywhere.
I can't imagine what I would think if I walked out front tomorrow and across the street, you know?
As the responsible dad adult now, that was, you know.
Oh, yeah, it's full dad mode now, man. I mean, there were, like, probably some 14-year-olds messing with some firecrackers across the street the other night. And it's just like, man, were we like that? We were definitely like that.
We were definitely.
Definitely.
Yeah, we were 100%. I was almost hoping that you would run across the street and just start playing ref and start counting one guy, like, one, two, oh, and the kick out, and the kick out. Like, just get in on it.
Oh, that's too good.
Even updated history, you are now our DM in our D&D group. We've had several of our members of the party join in various forms. Medrash back in the day, he was on that original Star Wars chat. And then recently we had Fargrim, Matt. He did a AW pay-per-view breakdown with us. So it's nice to finally have the DM with us here.
Yeah. You know, it's been a D&D kind of year, as it'll probably come up another time or two during this call. But, you know, one of those bucket list things, man. And then once you get into it, and, you know, we'll touch on this a little bit when we speak about Die later. But, you know, there's a lot of different reasons why it's awesome to play tabletop RPGs and awesome to run them as well. So, yeah, looking forward to talking about that.
Oh, yeah. I know that just the other day you and I were discussing some variant timelines that could have happened to our party and our campaign. And my exact response was, I just fucking love like D&D. And I'm so mad that it took us 30 plus years to finally start playing it. Like all the adventures we could have been having, places we could have seen, but you know what? Better late than never.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I've got a second group and one of our players is, I mean, he's probably, what do you think, Chris, in his like 60s?
Oh yeah, at least, yeah.
Yeah. And he's awesome. He's awesome. And he's never played. It's like a bucket list for him. You know, it took him probably 30 years longer than it took us to get in there. but he's having a ball, one of the best role players in the group. It's just one of those things that, you know, comes in at different times for different people. And I'll try to get the kids into it when they're a little bit older.
Well, one of my favorite things that I've learned so far about D&D is that there's so few barriers. You know, as long as everybody comes in and is accepting of each other and gives each other the grace to learn and grow into their characters, yeah, it doesn't matter, male, female, young, old, anything. Being a big gamer outside of role-playing or whatever, I mean, it seems like everybody can really jump in and do it so long as you,
yeah,
you know, kind of reach for the spirit of the role-playing games and what D&D is all about.
The human capacity for creativity and storytelling and imagination, I don't think it really goes away. I think that we just stop finding ways to embrace it as we get older. And, you know, it's amazing, even somebody in their first session playing within, you know, it's a little awkward at first, but within an hour, you know, they're immersed,
right,
and participating in the story in whatever capacity they feel comfortable. But similar to reading a good book or watching a good movie, that's the only thing going on in the brain. It's just a unique experience. And if anybody's out there listening who hasn't tried it doesn't have to be D&D, any kind of a in-person, tabletop, what have you, role-playing game, there's never been a better time to try one.
It seems like there's a lot of people really getting into it. I mean, I know we've talked about us being brand new to it, but quick story, I was actually training a coworker a couple of weeks ago, and she was pretty much every demographic that I would have never, ever expected. The words, oh yeah, I play D&D too, come out of her mouth. And I forget exactly how we even got down that line, but it was like 5 or 10 minutes into this like first training I was doing for her. And then we just didn't do training. We only talked about D&D, and it was just so, so crazy. Cause I mean, I wouldn't have pegged her for a nerd or into video games or anything based on what I did know about her in a professional setting. And then here we go, we've got this bond, and she was in a similar spot of, you know, I had some friends and I've heard some things and they wanted me to just join. So I tried it and loved it. And it just seems like I keep hearing more and more of that.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's almost like a 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, but it's like 6 degrees of D&D. Because if you ever, you know, come out of your shell enough to talk to somebody about it and they don't play, probably their brother-in-law plays or like one of their friends plays or
yeah,
something like that. And yeah, there's just, it's a lot more people participate than you realize. But I think that really the last couple of years has created the space for people to participate in these types of games. And I mean, if you just look at us as spread out as we are now, this has really been the first way that we've been able to spend a lot of time hanging out, playing a game, because we have Discord.
Yeah.
And people use Zoom. And there's myriad tools out there online to run games in as electronically augmented or as simple of a way as you want to.
Right.
We use D&D Beyond in our campaign. And, you know, they've totally integrated the character sheets and even the minutia of managing all these numbers into a approachable online format that anybody can walk up to if you're relatively savvy. Ease of entry is better than it's ever been. And also, I mean, board games have been growing for years. So you have people who maybe they play a board game, and a lot of board games have kind of mechanics which come from role-playing games, whether you're deceiving somebody on the other side or bluffing or rolling a dice or using a skill or a card. A lot of these things.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Kind of trace their lineage back. And I think that a lot of the growth of board games has also served as a gateway for people to be like, you know what? Yeah, I'd try that. And then they try a couple new things, and then a little bit further down the road and, you know, hey, I'd try some D&D or Pathfinder or whatever game folks play. You know, I think all these things have created a perfect storm. And if I'm not mistaken, they've had their highest year-over-year growth in the 40-year history of the game the last 2 years.
Wow. Yeah. Like Wizards of the Coast said that?
D&D.
Wow.
Yep. Makes sense when you just look at us and our ever-growing nebulous of people that want to play and want to get in on a game.
Yeah.
I'm writing a second campaign, totally homebrew, currently, which Kyle's going to participate in. But there's going to be another, I think, 3 first-timers. It just grows, and it's viral in a sense as well.
Well, it makes me wonder, since you said that, you know, like, was it the pandemic in general, like everybody just sitting around with more time on their hands, that maybe drove people being willing to get into it? Or is it the Discord, Zoom, you know, video call technology that helps? Because I would imagine that being in person for a lot of people, I think it would for me, at least at the beginning, would be way more intimidating than being in the safety of my own home with the camera kind of providing that shield, so to speak, because you do have to act a little bit. You don't have to,
yep.
But you know what I mean? Like, that is a lot of it. So that naturally makes people more uncomfortable. And so, you know, I just hearing that, I'd be kind of curious to see really kind of where that lie. We probably will never know.
I agree.
But how much did that have an impact?
To your point, the first game I played in, and we only play every couple months, but is a guy I game with, but the DMs lives in Australia, sometimes New Zealand. But yeah, we play no camera. You know, nobody plays. I mean, not on purpose, but wow. Nobody turns the. It's just how it is. I mean, nobody has turned it on yet, so we just don't. Nobody thinks.
Nobody's broken the fourth wall.
Yeah. So yeah, that's true about the safety of it. And I'd say that you're probably right. The technology and availability has made it easier. But I think that people are more familiar with those types of video calls because of COVID. And we've all been thrust into using them.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I've definitely spent more time on Zoom and Teams than I have a phone in the last 2 years by a lot.
Yeah.
For personal and professional at this point. I guess it accelerated that transition into those types of things.
I definitely think the technology piece you can't ignore. Like you said, the D&D Beyond in itself, like, takes that intimidation factor away, because if not, you'd be going out and buying the player's handbook and flipping through 300 plus pages to try to find an answer to a question versus flipping up D&D Beyond. I've got Google at my fingertips. It kind of like eases that transition. And I know, at least for our group in the beginning, D&D Beyond was amazing for us because we could easily look up a spell. Did it apply to our character? What does it do? Quick references. We could all kind of like come together and find the answer. And I think without technology, people are like, oh, I don't want to go out and buy a book. And then, you know, all of a sudden the pressure hits because you're in person, you're trying to flip through a book. The other people in the room are just looking at you. So I think all of that revolving around that Discord base really helps it.
Yeah, I distinctly remember when we were first building characters and, you know, we had that Excel sheet with the macros, you know, more of that old school, I guess, if you will, style. And we were figuring it out, but I remember being like, oh my God, this is going to be a struggle. And then whenever we found D&D Beyond, it just was a totally different story with how much it's simplified and streamlined. And, you know, everybody hates Excel anyways. So it just kind of took that whole frustration out of the factor. And it's got a good look and feel to it. You know, it kind of is engaging, but
there's probably some purists out there that can't believe that we're saying this.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Got to use paper.
So I'm in a few different groups and on Facebook and, you know, forums for DM stuff, because there's one about rules, because at some point you can't even, it's, you know, just to bounce off ideas off each other creatively. And Wizards has, you know, a couple people that like tweet out, like basically answers to commonly, you know, conundrums that, you know, come up and all these things. But one of the things that I've learned in some of these groups from some of these old school, like first edition, second edition guys is, you know, in the old days, you were just a group of kids with a little book. And like more often than not, if you couldn't figure it out, you just made it up, had a house rule.
And
nobody thought twice about it. But I think also these days, because of the access we have to information, that we're, I think, compelled as a society to get like every little detail of everything right.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I think that that also makes things more intimidating to people. Whereas, you know, if you're a bunch of kids with a book and you're making up the rules as halfway as you go along anyway, you know, there's not as much pressure there. So I think we place more pressure on ourselves now. So having a tool like that that can make it easier is a lot more important now than yeah. I mean, these guys, they would draw their own character sheets. They'd change the character sheet how they wanted to make it, you know, easy for them to use personally. You know, I think there's a much more of a, seems like there's a lot more tolerance back then, because, you know, you couldn't tweet the guy who wrote the rules in the handbook have a reasonable chance of him retweeting you and providing an explanation, you know? And so it creates like debate, and, you know, everybody wants to be right now, and everybody loves to argue, and the internet, I mean, my God, it's the internet. So the arguing over these rules sometimes, but anyway, you know, there's a lot of great things, but you know, the technology we've had has definitely lowered that barrier for a lot of people. And it's been a highlight of the last couple of years, being able to play role-playing games with my friends.
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting because, you know, for years we've always been video gamers, and of course, connectivity and games, you know, online multiplayer and stuff has always been there. And there's been spells where a bunch of us, or, you know, smaller subsets of us, will play a whole lot of a game. Like Destiny came to mind. There was a while there where we were constantly playing Destiny online and stuff like that. But it seemed like it kind of got harder and harder over time. And now this last 9 months, you know, especially like playing almost every 2 weeks, like we've been able to be more consistent with this group of six for D&D than we have for video games in a long time. And it's arguably a whole lot more work to make D&D work than it is to just jump on the PlayStation and boot up a game, you know? So I think that's just been really cool, because I feel a lot more connected to everybody now just from this.
Absolutely.
100%. Well, I think Medrash, Mike, you know, we live an hour away, but he's got two kids. Like, and over the years, we've gone to DC United games, but that kind of dropped off because life just happens. And it's been fantastic to have, to get to see him on a biweekly basis, get to see Alex on a biweekly basis now, because you live in Texas.
Right.
You know, and I'm in Maryland, so we can't exactly just like, hey, you want to come over for dinner and play a board game or like couch co-op something? Like, yeah, it's been awesome. That I said it, I think, day one when we started playing. I said it when we provided a little bit of feedback, and I'm going to say it now. Like, the best part is just seeing my friends.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I know we could probably talk D&D for hours and hours, and thankfully it's tied directly into Die. But before we jump over there, Alex, since you are a little bit of a newer DM and we're talking about it here, I just thought it'd be cool for anybody that's out there listening that might be interested in becoming a DM or starting a group
sure.
for the first time. And so I was curious if you had like one tip that you would give them, like something that you've really found was most helpful for you as you were learning how to DM a D&D game.
Oof. One tip is tough. One tip is tough.
Putting you on the spot one for tip. One
yeah,
tip.
Yeah, one tip.
If I had one tip, I would say don't sweat the small stuff, just have fun. Because the amount of pressure that, you know, players have to, like, you know, get it right as they're playing, it's, you know, five times that as a DM for the first time, because you're responsible for all these other people to learn the game, to like the game, to get the right impression of it, and to want to engage with it further. But at the end of the day, especially if you have new players and you're the one in your group of friends that decided to make it happen, like, you know, to, you know, I'll be the DM. Let's just play. They don't know what's going on anyway, man. If you get the rule wrong or you do something, they don't know. There's so true. Much. I mean, even like months in, there's so much that players and DMs that we don't even know. And we're like having a second guess or make a note and figure out later. So if you're considering running a game, get a pre-made module so that you can just go through the book and don't sweat the small stuff. If you don't know, make it up and just keep it moving.
I like it.
Yeah, there's always time to refine. I mean, we actually had that exact moment in our last session where I was kind of doing a spell a little different. We just made a call and then circled back afterwards and made a ruling that ultimately would be different moving forward. But hey, you know, we had a good time that night and now we know, you know, moving forward. So I can totally see that.
Resist the urge to get it right. You know, like we were saying, everybody, we want to expect ourselves to be perfect in all aspects of our lives these days. You got to resist that and just be a bunch of kids, you know, transport yourself into Stranger Things days where you're just a bunch of kids around a table with a goofy wizard hat and you're just having fun. That's all you have to worry about if you're thinking about DMing. Just live that.
I can dig it. I can dig it. And I think it's safe to say that you've been geeking out on D&D, so that kind of covers the what have you been geeking out on lately.
Covers a lot of it, yeah. I mean, there's a new Dragon source book coming out in about a week. Almost a week, exactly, maybe. That's going to be big.
Yeah.
I don't even want to take the time to go through the abominations in this book, the things that are in here, but a lot of cool stuff.
I get the feeling that sometime down the line, we're going to get the party on and have a single session with all six of us and kind of just chat about the adventures that we've had and the characters and fun moments, because we've, as a group, we've certainly had a few of them, just belly laughs, shock moments. You know, and you dropped the bomb, the dragons. We recently fought our first dragon, and that was a ton of fun. So one of these days, we'll get the whole gang on, chat it out, and just have some laughs. But on to the reason we've asked Alex to join us on this specific chapter, and that is the Image comic Die, the dark fantasy written by Kieran Gillian, illustrated by Stephanie Hans, kicked off in December of 2018. And here we are, four volumes and 20 issues later, to bring it to a close. The series started with a fairly simple premise: Jumanji meets Stephen King's It, set in a Dungeons & Dragons landscape. Six teenagers were trapped in a fictional RPG world, escape, then 25 years later, they're forced to go back. What started out as simple unraveled into something much deeper. Gillian's character-first storytelling mixed with Hans's emotional art turned this unassuming series into a record-breaking, award-winning hit. For a complete breakdown of previous story arcs, make sure to check out our chapters 8, 13, and 34. But in short, over the course of the first three volumes, readers tagged along with Ash, party leader and dictator with the ability to influence and control others by way of spoken spells. Angela, Ash's younger sister, who plays a cyberpunk-styled Neo. The emotion-driven knight Matthew, whose depression and anger fuels his abilities. Isabel, the godbinder, who trades offerings with the different gods throughout the realm of Dai to gain advantages. Then there's Chuck the Fool and Solomon, who was once the Grandmaster controlling the game, but now sees himself as a fallen after being killed in-game by his childhood best friend Ash. Through their journey, the group is forced to rehash and relive all the choices they made in their first visit as they start to get a better understanding of the world around them. All of this while feeling the pressure of what they could be missing at home. After battles and war, party splits and reformations, the players had enough and wished to return to the real world. However, there was one more thing they must do, a final dungeon crawl to the center of Dai. The campaign to the center forces each party member to confront their true self and why they play the game. As we chat about the fourth volume, we'll no doubt be spoiling some of it, so consider this your warning. But with that, let's dive in to our guest first. Alex, what were your thoughts on the conclusion of Dai?
I thought it was fantastic. There was a lot to tie in a bow on there going into this last issue. There were a lot of different threads, maybe some, you know, that were left for the reader's interpretation. But, you know, I think they did a really good job tying it up. We knew, you know, they know this isn't going to be an ongoing series and they needed to have an appropriate end to that narrative. And I think they nailed it.
For sure. And it was very poetic that it ended on 20.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah, I like that they did that.
It was one of those things for me where I knew that it was ending. I think I had read an article or somewhere after the third arc ended that it was going to end in volume 4 and that's all we were going to get. But I don't think it was until like issue 17 came out that I realized that the actual final issue was going to be 20. And I couldn't help but be like, that was slick. That was slick there, fellas.
Well, and it was supposed to come out last year in 2020 on top of that and got delayed from COVID. So, like, Kieran definitely had this whole thing planned out to line all those dates up like a weird Mayan calendar or something, you know?
For sure, for sure. But, I mean, yeah, Alex, you put it perfectly. They put a nice little bow on it. I'll say, personally, I don't know if it was my favorite story arc of the four, but it was a very fitting end, like, for the series. I felt like it hit all the right notes for each of the individual characters. Really, like I said, making them look themselves in the mirror, find them true selves, and why they play the game, which is actually something you had alluded to earlier when we were talking about D&D. Like, why people play the game in general.
I mean, looking at it, I think that you're right. And, you know, as the earlier arcs, a lot of it, you're caught up in these really creative fantasy ideas. And they did an excellent job not following, you know, because they could have just as easily made him a fighter, a wizard, a sorcerer, right? But they, and followed the tropes.
True.
Yeah.
But there were no tropes. They were incredibly unique ideas for fantasy classes. And maybe some of them are in like a cyberpunk game or something that we're not familiar with, but still. And that was great. And one of the things that I really liked about looking back from issue 20 to the front is, you know, the classes are really in some ways reflections of who they were in the real world.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe who they wish to be. And it kind of varied person by person. And I think that resonates with, as you're saying, why anybody plays a role-playing game, to either be somebody different, to, you know, be an enhanced version of who you are. And I think that even, you know, there could be something to someone who prefers to play as a DM versus a player. And are you looking to manipulate who you are, or are you looking to manipulate the world around you? And, you know, maybe in your real life, which of these things is something that, you know, that the game allows you to explore? So I think we got a lot of really great, unique fantasy concepts and new ideas in the earlier arcs. What I liked about the last arc is it, you know, answers like and he says, what am I for, you know, in issue 20. And it's it's a tough question for them to answer, but in the end it's not. And how do you end a game? How do you end a campaign and return to your real life and deal with the real problems in your real life? And maybe how experiencing some of these concepts in a role play fashion can better equip you to deal with some of that trauma and some of those problems in the real world. So there's, I mean, for me with issue 20, that's why I think it was such a great way to end the book.
I can say that I feel that way every Wednesday morning. We play on Tuesday nights, but now go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I think overall I would agree, and I imagine we might dive a little bit into issue 20 specifically as we go through this, but I will just throw out there, I thought that volume 4 was slower and less action-packed than I expected going in. Even though the series didn't have a whole lot of like big action, you know, the way they approached fights and combat and stuff was a little bit more about giving you like this one key moment and then what's coming next versus drawn out fights or lots of panels of this, you know, back and forth or anything like that. But of course, in that typical Dungeons and Dragons trope, you know, they ended volume 3 with this concept that they were going into a dungeon. And so I was just kind of expecting like, okay, we're going to get a little bit more combat battle to wrap this up since we hadn't seen it. And then when you get in there and they get to the dungeon, you realize that there's a battle going on. But I think, Alex, you alluded to, it's much more the battle within themselves still. And it made total sense because at the core, that's really what Die has been about the whole time is these people, what they're experiencing with the inner conflicts in their own minds and then the conflicts that they have with each other. And so, you know, it made a lot of sense that essentially the quote unquote, you know, final boss was just like a bigger, badder version of that for all of them instead of some, you know, monster or dragon or something like that. But it did throw me off a little bit. I ultimately still enjoyed it and thought it was very fitting to end and wrap up. I think you said tie a bow on it, but at first I was like, oh, you know, it kind of got a little bit of that head fake. And that's something that Gillen really kind of did throughout the whole thing was use those core elements to make it into a very strong story and give you the things that you're kind of expecting. But also he constantly kind of took a left turn and gave you things that you weren't expecting.
It basically flipped everything on its head.
Yeah.
Like that was all throughout, like exactly what you said. I'm going to show you one thing, but then when it finally comes to deliver, I'm going to flip it. It's not going to be what you expect. And I think it's funny you said, look yourself in the mirror and the true boss is yourself. That actually was the case for Ash in, I believe, issue 19, where she literally goes up against a giant version of herself, you know, looking herself in the mirror, which was truly fantastic. All in all, I thought it was just so good. I thoroughly enjoyed the head fake. I think the only thing that maybe I didn't just love was it felt like the Lovecraft stuff was kind of forced in a little bit. Like, it made sense, and it certainly tied in well. And of course, I think there's a point where Ash actually says, like, none of this even makes sense. None of this fits. Why am I even talking to you? And then you realize, like, 3 issues in that she's been breaking the fourth wall and it has gone unexpected. But that may have been the only piece to this that I was like, I kind of wish you had filled this space with something else. I don't know what I wanted, but that was the only one where maybe pick a different writer from history and work them in. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know enough about the actual history of role-playing games to know. You know, because they talked about some of the early war games and stuff like that and like different authors and different like they had these little connections in there. And I don't know how much of it was factual and, you know, how much of it was the author, you know, taking liberties to tell a story. I agree with you there. I guess if I was going to take anything from some of these stuff where it has things from the past and the future and like all this like swirling together is more of just a statement around the consistency of the human condition and the types of fears and problems that we all deal with and humanity has dealt with through different generations and to the point of her daughter in an older form is there, like this will be something that she deals with. And so the game itself exists outside of that and has and always will. And in a way that is true. You know, our children's children will have these same feelings and worries and seek their own forms of distraction and separation from the real world. So, you know, I just kind of took some of the things from the past that didn't quite fit. And that's kind of what I took from it was just like a greater commentary.
That's how I took it too. And, you know, early on, it was kind of funny. Another one of those head fakes, right? Like when they introduce H.G. Wells in volume three, you know, you kind of get this impression of like, okay, well, maybe Wells is the architect of all this.
Right.
You know, he's the grandmaster. And then you hear talk of Tolkien. And then, yeah, you get Lovecraft in there. And it's kind of like bouncing you around of like, who really is the one who originally dreamed all of this up? And then when you get into the part of the center of Dai where it reminded me of the temple of the many-faced god in Game of Thrones, you know, there's that panel and they walk in and it's all the orbs and he's essentially explaining that, you know, these are all the dreams of all these different people from around. And it just kind of, then that's what summed it into me was that, okay, well, what Gillen is saying here is that all of these different creative minds, you know, going into Alex's point here, they were all kind of seeking the same thing. And that's that escape from their reality. And that is like just baked into our human condition. I mean, you see it even in the littlest of kids. I mean, 3 and 4 year olds role play when they are emulating their parents or cops and robbers or, you know, whatever it is, like, it's just part of our nature to want to escape our reality. And so to me, it was almost like him painting that picture that the game is bigger than any one person. And, you know, it even brought in these like titans of science fiction or fantasy that we all hold in such regard.
Very true. Very true. I think, and I'm thinking of the orb part that you just mentioned, one of my favorite little pieces came from the essays that come in the back issues, where Gillen goes on to say that those orbs are actually us, the readers, and the people that are going to go on to play his RPG that he's made and put out on the internet. And like, so we are actively shaping this story just by reading it. And like, one more twist, one more head fake, one more just like, I can't handle it, my head is spinning moment while reading this comic.
Well, and it's such a beautiful thing about any RPG, but we'll just use Dungeons & Dragons since we've been on that kick. But, you know, the rules are essentially the same for everybody if you were to follow them black and white, you know. But go game to game, and even if they're using a pre-done book like we have, you know, you probably still have a DM who's homebrewing.
Yep.
Or you have a crazy character that turns into a pants empire having, you know, barbarian that makes no sense. But, like, you know, so it's just, there's just every single one is unique no matter what. So I really love that concept of the pocket dimension and all of those existing, though still in the same world.
I think the game, in a way, does unfold like a dream because, you know, a lot of dreams are things in your, you know, your unconscious mind kind of manifesting themselves into a usually very weird and disconnected story. But, you know, what's not D&D if not like letting your, or any, or I should say just role-playing games, in letting those things in your unconscious mind, whether they are some fears or things that you like or things that you've experienced recently, books that you've read and seen. I mean, in a way, it kind of unfolds similarly because, you know, the game's happening, you roll the dice, you have an idea and you say it, but there's no script. And where these ideas come from. And I think it's a similar to the place of where dreams do.
Yeah, 100%. Well, and a nice little segue you've provided for me here is dream sequences is kind of how I felt as I looked at the book. I know we're talking a lot about the story and the basis of all that, but Hans's art throughout the entire series has had this very faded look to it, almost as if it were a dream, like there's no real detail to it. Like, and it's been fitting since issue one, but looking at it through the lens that this is all a dream or a dream space, like it would have those grayed out areas, the lack of details, like your vision is just slightly blurred.
Well, and I think you called it out in a previous chapter we did here, Kyle, when we were talking about that, but it just coming back to me was that there are no hard lines or very few hard lines in the art, you know, the clothing just kind of fades away into the background and things like that. So putting now in the context of a dream after seeing the end here, I think that's very fitting. That I'd be curious if that was really what she was going for with
that's great
with the style she chose.
Yeah, I could very much see that. Just a lot of warm colors throughout, just bleeding from one to the next. Great use of oranges and reds, like obviously in those warm colors is fantastic.
Oh, we've said it before. I mean, and it's worth saying again, the art is absolutely every bit as masterful as the storytelling here, you know, and you could easily just flip through this book solely for that. So shout out to Stephanie Hans. We've talked about it a few times, but super, super satisfying to look through every panel.
It's not totally devoid of detail because there are those moments when you see like just emotion on a character's face. They're crying, they're worried, whatever it may be. Those, I think the larger panels where you get like, maybe it's a smaller panel, but it's their entire face.
Right.
Like you can really see it in the welling of their eyes or something like that. I think it's love Stephanie Hans's art. I've said it before, I'll say it again. Like, for me, in when I read comic books, the art has to match the story, and it has never stopped in this book. It's since the beginning and throughout to the end. But as we kind of look at the art, you know, it's something Chris and I, we've talked about before. A lot of these big panels, they invoke these favorite moments, these iconic moments within the series. So I'm going to ship it over to Alex first here, and this can be from Volume 4, or can be from the entire series. Are there any moments, either storytelling-wise or visually with the art, that stick out to you?
Well, one of the things that's from Volume 3 that really stuck out to me was when, you know, Matt, the party's kind of split, and, you know, they're split, you know, physically, but also in terms of their objectives and whether they want to go back to the real world. Or whether they would just as soon stay in this one that's been created for them and by them. Matt, it wants to, at this point, he wants to get back, and he's, you know, endeavoring to do that. But then at the same time, kind of a decision gets made for him.
True. Yeah.
And then he finds out about his father, and, you know, there's a twist in issue 20, all the way later in issue 20 about it. But Mistress Wo comes in, and, you know, when he thinks his father's dead and it's too late and he didn't get back in time, what's fueled him, his character, is like this sadness, and the sadder he gets, the more powerful he becomes. And when he's at his saddest, he's the most powerful entity in the universe, basically. Like he sunders anything.
Pretty much. And
it speaks about the power of that emotion. But, you know, he has this moment where he like breaks the rules of the game, so to speak, and wields two weapons, and the other one is fed by his rage and his anger. There's just so much going on in that moment, in the storytelling, in on the human emotion side of things, inside the game and out, and then, you know, kind of the way he transitioned through those emotions and how it manifested itself, and then the way he sets off from there. Is something that stuck with me all the way to the end.
I think I distinctly remember that panel. And Chris, I think you also distinctly remember that panel.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember that being like a holy shit moment.
Yeah.
And there was a couple of them throughout this whole series, but they had already established Matt as being so powerful. Like, we see him just devastate, you know, groups of enemies and stuff with like a swing. And so, yeah, when he grabbed that second one and he's like, I'm setting off, you know, to get my revenge. Like, I think my jaw hit the floor of like, what is about to happen? Like, he might blow the entire world up with these two swords. So it was super, super powerful. I'm with you there.
I just think of the art once again, like where he's holding one in his right hand, one in his left hand, and he almost powers up. And you've got the blues and the greens coming out of the Sword of Grief, and the reds and the orange coming out of the Maul of Anger, and just engulfing him. It's just, oh man.
Yes.
Emotional. There's no other way to put it. Like, yes, he's the emotion-driven knight, so naturally that word comes to mind. But as a reader, it draws you in and makes you feel exactly what he is feeling in that moment.
You're absolutely right. The art plays a huge, huge part in that point.
shift it over to Chris here, volume four or the entire series. Any favorite moments?
There was a few. I mean, looking all the way back, just to give it a shout out, I remember when the party destroyed Glasstown in volume one. I thought that was a really cool couple of panels and was a really kind of powerful way there to end that volume, you know, because they hit that and then they go right into the event where Ash kills Saul and sets up kind of the rest of what we get in the remaining volumes. But I really have to say two things stood out from volume four that might have been my favorite panels. And the first was that Balrog, I called it, of Ash's alternate identity, you know, the phoenix-like flame standing in front of them, very imposing, but still had her face and all of that. I thought that was really good. But honestly, I think the end of it was, out of all of it, my favorite panel was the reveal of the Grandmaster. And when he's like standing there and he's got the helm off and the D20 head, and it's just like him pretty much, you know, first time being fully exposed to the party. And I really just like, I want like a big painting of it. Like I want that panel framed as just a giant picture on the wall, because I just thought it was really, really awesome. And, you know, he's just like, what am I for? You know, and that was, I think, the last page of issue 19. And so it was just kind of this good moment leading right into what was going to be the finale. Yeah. So those were kind of the standouts for me. What about you, Kyle?
Well, it's funny. You mentioned Ash basically seeing a Balrog version of herself. And honestly, as far as volume four goes, I had a few. Most of them involved Chuck. But the one that doesn't involve Chuck actually is the Tolkien references, like the subtle ones that are peppered in. Like, obviously, there is a Fly You Fools instant shout out. But my actual favorite one is at the end of issue 17, where they're about to enter and they literally have to speak the word friend to enter. And it's and it's really because of the moment that Ash and Saul have together. That after all these years, 25 plus years apart, they are still best friends. And it's still, he created this game for Ash so Ash could realize her true self. And I think you don't really get that reveal until 1920. But after you get that reveal, going back and rereading 17 and seeing that moment, like they were in the cell together back in, I believe, the second story arc, where they were finally chatting, and like you just get these subtle moments where like Ash is like, he's still my best friend. He still means everything to me. And then of course Saul is a fallen, so he's going back and forth between conscious of what he's doing and all out rage. But it was just this perfect moment. They grasp hands, they come together, and they speak friend, and they open up the door. And it's just, you know, like I said, for me, D&D is all about hanging out with my friends and reconnecting and having a good time. And I think that's why that particular panel resonated with me so much, because that's what they're doing.
Well, and it was such a perfect setup because, yeah, they build on that little by little throughout the whole series. And then you get that moment, which is a great call out. And then it's after that that Saul finds his journal and starts reading like what he was writing while he was on his own trying to survive and die and figure out what was going on. And like, I thought that was some of the most heart-wrenching moments too, because he's talking about like, oh yeah, they're going to come back for me.
Yeah.
And there was like a couple of lines in there where you could see like he had the hope and then all the hope faded. So just that whole build to getting that at that moment in time, I thought really was like a really appropriate time, because it made it that much more impactful.
Yeah,
for sure. For sure.
You almost can't count how many just beautiful human moments this book had. Few and far between are there comics that I feel like you could write like a literary paper on.
True.
Yeah.
I mean, and, you know, I've only been reading a little bit more indie stuff the last like couple years. You know, as we've talked about, you know, trying to get away from the retread stories, but not since, I mean, a couple years ago, I read like God Country by Donny Cates, you know, as I'm just trying to think of like a human story, but told through the lens of a comic. Honestly, I don't know if there's one that covered so many different aspects of humanity and how we deal with these things as I have this book. So, I mean, both of you guys' points were awesome.
in preparation for this one, I went back and I actually looked at my notes for the previous chapters that we had covered Die, and I couldn't help but smile when we first covered it in chapter 8, which was 2 years ago for us. Wow. I had said, like, one of my main appeals of this book was that it was a break from superhero comics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, it still had some superhero-y aspects in that they all had abilities, but at its core, it was not a superhero comic. And then it's just, it's so interesting to me that here we are 2 years later, and, like, it's one of my favorite comic books of all time, favorite series of all time, like, maybe my favorite, and it's for that exact reason. It's a break from the superhero tropes of comic books and really character-driven, like, hitting home.
Well, it's so personal, and they don't really leave anything off the table. I mean, you have every type of human interaction that you could expect is kind of played out in one way or another throughout this book. And also, they did a great job at crafting the characters because they all were, I think, very relatable for somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, I think every person could have picked at least one, maybe two, that you could relate to. And it wasn't stereotypical or, like, you know, at that kind of basic level relation. You know,
yes,
we were mentioning, like, they still were creative and they gave them these deep backstories. And so it really ultimately was always about the party. You know, it was always about the people, and even getting back to what we said before about how the dungeon worked out to be a dungeon of their minds and their relationships. I mean, it kept the party and that real human factor center at all times, no matter what else you wanted. And that's why it was so engrossing, you know, because you don't get that with a Tony Stark. Or, you know, a Captain, like, whoever your favorite superhero is, like, you still don't get that level of personal connection, I feel. It's just different, right?
It's a very watered-down version that maybe touches on some of these themes a little bit.
Yeah.
It's Batman dealing with some kind of loss. You know, it's like Cherry Coke is Coke, you know? You're not, it doesn't, you know, right?
Right, yeah.
But,
yeah,
you know, versus eating, getting a handful of some fresh cherries, you know what I mean? Like, it's a very pure and complete dive into these things.
Yeah. And I think it kind of naturally, this conversation goes right into issue 20 here. And one of the things I had that I just really was kind of blown away at in issue 20 as it all was coming together and we were seeing how it was playing out was that, at the end of the day, Kieran Gillen still kept all the focus on two things, the people and the game. And I thought that it was almost like this weird sense of tribute to role-playing games. And, like, that was kind of the point of the whole series. I don't know if either of you kind of got this, but, like, it just really kind of gave me this sense of, yeah, you know, this game that's so silly can also connect people in ways that they would never find elsewhere. And that's just such a beautiful thing in life. Like, that's kind of how I walked away from the final issue. I'm not sure if you all have thoughts there, but that, I thought it was masterful. Like, I wasn't expecting it, kind of came out of nowhere, but I was like, damn, like, this is kind of touching from that standpoint.
Oh, I mean, yeah, absolutely. I think this series in itself sends you down a path of personal reflection. And what you love. And I noted that, like, I couldn't help but notice the parallels. And I didn't know it was because of where I am in my life or because we just started playing D&D. Like, but I felt super connected to this book as a whole. Like, and closing issue 20 down had, like, I'm not gonna lie, like, my tears welled up. It felt like this complete, very difficult to explain, but just feeling inside, because this book has meant so much to me personally, not just because of the story, but because of kind of, it's been the one comic book, and this kind of gets away from issue 20, and I apologize for that, but this has been a weird comic for me that I passed to a few different people, and then it became so important to them.
Yeah.
And that was just a first for me. Like, I remember at Baltimore Comic Con, we were walking around, Alex, and I was like, hey, I just started reading this book. You should pick it up. And I don't think you bought it that day, but I think you eventually started reading it. And then in a very similar story with Chris, like I was like, hey, I think you might enjoy this. And you started reading it. And then you did. And we did a couple chapters on it. We had friends outside of our circle reading it and reaching out and being like, hey, this book is like crazy good.
More than any other book we've ever covered. I think we should call that out. Like,
yeah.
People that don't even read comics went out and got copies of these volumes because of what this book is all about and loved it.
Yeah.
And loved it. And I think what the book is all about and that my personal connection with that, like, yeah, I totally agree with you. It's this personal reflection that hit home that, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, man, it's mm-hmm. over. It's done.
Yeah. I mean, let's get away. I mean, I know we're getting away from 20, but let's do it. Let's talk about it. So, you know, and I agree with you fully. And you said this earlier, Chris, I think, you know, how different people probably, you know, it touched on so many things, and any person is going to be able to grab onto like a handful of things, right? You know, I can appreciate a lot of the other themes, but, you know, maybe I don't have an actual perspective inside of them, you know, like Ashes, for example.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I can understand and appreciate it, and it's a great vehicle for me to empathize with this person. But at the same time, you know, those aren't the themes that naturally I grab to. But there is something for everyone, and somebody else probably read this and was just like, it probably helps somebody like immensely mm-hmm. dealing with their own feelings or, you know, finding their own way in life. And, you know, to your point, Kyle, about recommending it to people, there's nothing more exposing to someone, I think, than to recommend something that you enjoy for a deep reason to others and putting yourself out there and just hoping that they experienced the same thing that you did.
Yeah.
And so thank you for exposing me to this book, because it was such a good book. And there's so many great, the endless parallels. And even just, you know, in my experience introducing you guys to Dungeons and Dragons, right? And to role-playing games in general is a similar thing. And then with Soul and making this game for his friends, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is something that resonates with me.
Yeah.
Emotionally, and you know, Critical Role has kind of gotten to this point where it's like too big and there's a lot of haters now, right?
Yeah.
Because of how they're so big budget and all this stuff. Yeah. And it's like, you know, people only listen to like indie streams, you know, like small ones, because like it's whatever. But you know, there's numerous times kind of at the end of the campaigns, and I'm sure in other campaigns it's the same way, but this is the one that probably the most people have watched, where they talk to Matthew Mercer about it. And at the end of the day, like, he's in tears because he made this game for his friends, you know? So it's like,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
So that was huge. And the other way that I looked at this book, and issue 20 kind of maybe getting back to it, gave me this alternate take on it as well. The whole story could have almost happened without actually happening in like a metaphorical sense, because the times when they disappeared could be times in their lives where maybe they disconnected from loved ones. They weren't present in their own lives.
Yeah.
Or, and they've lost themselves in this game. But maybe they didn't, you know? And I don't know if that's something the artist was building, baking in as like another read on it. But then eventually they come back and like their family's like so happy to see them and like welcome them and they love them and they missed them. But all these things would also be true if you had just not spoken to your father for 8 years or whatever, because you were dealing with your depression, or if you hadn't seen your child that you became disenfranchised with for whatever reason. Maybe he did make this game as a kid, and maybe they just didn't play for 25 years and see each other for 25 years, but then they did and they still had the same issues, you know. But maybe Soul was thinking about the game all along and toiling away by himself, feeling abandoned because he had lost connections with his friends. Like, the whole game could have kind of like not actually happened, but the themes would still be accurate. And I think that's just, you know, when we're drawing the parallel to our group and the amount of time we've spent together playing role-playing games after years of, you know, not spending as much time, you know, it kind of parallels that as well.
That's true, yeah. Like, an old fight could potentially come out, but, you know, or something, some of those interpersonal connections could still be there. I'm glad you brought that up, because honestly, when I was wrapping this up, I kept thinking to myself, like, maybe none of this really happened. You know, like when you read the book throughout, especially early on, it feels very literal. Like these people literally got sucked into this world, you know, Jumanji style, as even Gillen has kind of described it in himself. And then you get to the end, and I did have these feelings of that, Alex, of like, maybe this didn't happen. This really was them just playing the game. I don't think I was able to put my finger on it the way you just did, so I appreciate that, because I think that kind of fleshes that out a little bit more. But, you know, if you thought about what would happen if you just played a campaign straight, like nonstop, like everybody gets locked in one house and you can't leave until you end a D&D campaign, like you could have a couple years go by, so even maybe something like that could have been at work, where they all, you know, just disappeared from the family. That might be a stretch, but you know what I mean? Like something along those lines where, yeah, they were still in the main world, but they were very much more focused on the fantasy versus the reality.
The way that their loved ones reacted to them coming back into their lives.
Yeah.
I mean, they said they talked to the police and all that stuff. So maybe, you know, that take isn't there, but the way that their loved ones were reacting is identical to how your family would react if you had just kind of fallen off the grid or hadn't spoken or, you know, hadn't mended those fences for a long time.
That's a really good take, I think.
So that's something in issue 20 that I think was why I thought it was so well wrapped up. You know, that was my favorite part of the last issue.
Yeah. No, I love all of that. Like, to add to it, I think you could almost say because of Chuck's ending, and he's got a terminal disease, like if you wanted to go as far as saying they came back together to reunite with Chuck on his last few days.
Yeah.
Like, I think it would feed right into that theory.
I just got goosebumps as you thinking about that, to be honest. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he can't. Right.
That is a.
And he can't come back.
Phenomenal
right?
take.
You know, right.
He's passed away.
Yeah.
But he lives on within the spirit of the game, right? And in their memories. So it's like, you know, he gets back up and like,
yeah. As I say, they left him as an NPC, essentially, in the game.
Right.
So, like, man, now I want to reread it right now with that thought that process lens, and see if there's anything hidden in there, man. And even at the very final page of issue 20, you know, when you get that panel of Saul taking off the glasses and he's still got the D20 in his eye and it says simply, it's all for you.
Yeah.
And like that gave me goosebumps when I read it. I mean, it was so impactful. And maybe some of that also is just we all have had very, even though D&D is fresher for us, like we all have very long histories of RPG video games and tabletop and having our own adventures through the woods of Myersville, you know, and stuff that we would do as kids. So like it just really, really hits home when you think about all that time that we've escaped.
Indeed, indeed. Well, I think that kind of wraps up our discussion on the various issues as this particular set of die. And it kind of moves on to a question I had for each of you as far as where does this series go moving forward? And so the first question is going to be, do you want it to move forward? And then if yes, what else would you like to see out of this world? Is it another story? Is it these same characters? What could that be? And so I'll kick it over to Alex first in that first question. You and I talk about this all the time with comic books. Sometimes it's nice that there's a beginning, a middle, and an end, and that's what you get, and that's the story, and there's not this need to have a sequel. So would you like to see either a sequel or more from the world of Die, or are you happy with it as it is?
I mean, it's one of the best books. I'm not just going to say comic books, because I read a bit of fiction work, and it's one of the best works of fiction that I've read. And emotionally, I mean, yeah, you want more, but I think that it would be, in a way, irresponsible to try to continue the same story with the same characters within this same lens. Because, you know, sure, you know, you wish the best for some of these characters and you wish that their experiences allow them to finally deal with their traumas and deal with their failed relationships and their families and all of these things. But I don't think that they need to go back to Die to do that. I don't think there's anything left for them and these particular issues in that world.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's good as is, man. I think that you could get another group of characters, a new campaign, if you will, and have them deal with, you know, their own issues. And I'm sure there's plenty of them out there, but I mean, they hit on a lot of big ones for a lot of different people in this book. And so I don't know what you would fill that with. And then I also don't know if now that the, you know, the curtains open or whatever you want to say, like the, you know, now we know, like you said, in the beginning, we had these ideas and it kept like the twists and no, this is what it really means.
Yeah.
And I think that if there was a new arc or a new die or even with new people, I think I would be reading it differently from the beginning and that journey wouldn't be the same for me. So for me, I'll hold, leave it as is. This thing's great. I mean, this team, I hope they continue to work together in a creative capacity because it was really a perfect marriage of the art and even the lettering and the story and all these things. So I hope that they continue to do a lot of work together, tell some additional stories and that have real meaning to people that are like this in a way of what they're trying to accomplish and address real world issues. But for me, die, leave it as is. Don't touch it.
Let us build our own stories in the RPG that we're allowed to play. So I'll shift it over to Chris and get your thoughts on this one. If you agree with Alex, you like the series as is. If you'd like to see some exploration, could be a new creative team and just building in this world.
Yeah, I mean, the natural inclination is to want more. You know, just when anything is this good, TV show, comic, video game, you know, no matter what the medium is, if it's good on this level, you just want more. But I think that I really would have to just agree with Alex in how this specific story came together, the reveals they gave. You know, I don't think that they could go and do an issue 21 with these same characters. I think that pretty much needs to be its own, you know, pocket dimension or whatever you want to call it, you know, and leave that there. And if they were to do anything, yeah, it's going to have to be new characters. Even if they're going to the world of Die, maybe there's some differences. You know, it's not the exact same world of Die, so that way they can introduce some fresher elements, do some different things without being forced into, you know, hey, Glass Town was destroyed or whatever it may be, right? And that might be hard because, honestly, I almost want to say that Gillen and Hans caught lightning in a bottle with these 20 issues because of the fact that it's rare that you find works of art where so many people come out of them with almost the same thoughts. And that's kind of what I'm hearing here between the three of us is like, you know, and we've known each other, we've got similar personalities, but at the same time, for all of us to be like, yeah, this is pretty much, we've got the same feelings. That's kind of something in itself to me. And so I just don't think they'd be able to 100% capture that again if they tried, you know, with this particular story. So to your point, let the RPG be the sub-stories that people get and evolve and utilize to get their fix. And I almost am kind of jealous. Like, there's a part of me that just wants us to, like, stop our current campaign and just start playing the Die RPG. Even though that would be sad in its own right. But, like, it does seem that intriguing. And the world was that cool.
Yeah. I think for me, it would be the individual realms that I don't know if I need another comic. I just need more information. Like, because the world in itself is so good because they pulled it back a couple arcs ago, that the world itself is a big 20-sided die.
Right.
And each side is its own realm. And there are, I mean, I think we barely scratched the surface. We saw maybe 5 realms in total throughout the 20 issues. So, and I know in one of the back page essays, Gillian talks about Realm 8 and, oh, you don't want to go to Realm 8. And now all of a sudden I'm I want to go to Realm 8.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, so maybe not a comic, but I really would like to see the RPG take off just so I can have more information on the world that they've built.
Well, if there's a good source book for it, they may address all those things. But I have a question is, maybe this gets amended a little bit for the RPG to exist, but if there was another die, would it be the same world? Because Sol is the dungeon master, game master, the grandmaster in the book, they call it. And you know, he's created this world and has always created this world, as it said. And so if John in California is the grandmaster of Die, Take Two, is it the same world?
It would be hard for it, I it guess, can't based be. On how yeah. they yeah,
Soul made exactly. the world. So unless Soul's involved with his, you know, his, in the last panel, you know, I don't know that it is the same world. I don't know that we could learn more about it unless he's involved.
No, that's a good point, because even the inclusion of Bronte and Wells and all of them, they pretty much explain that as the self-aware game, you know, kind of stretched backwards and forwards in time to make sure that its goals were realized. So you could really take that as, you know, Wells and them weren't actually involved in creating Die. They were like manipulated to become a means to the end. So therefore Saul worked them into the game.
Right. Yeah. Their influence manifesting.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly. Whereas you, when you originally read it, like, especially with Wells, you're like, oh no, here's the architect. Like I said before.
Right.
And it,
yeah, really it kind of makes you, like you said, have fake think it's like a supernatural thing, but you know, it's just Soul's knowledge of these authors that their impact. And I think also, and we're kind of rehashing, but you know, just a commentary on before the role-playing game, you know, or in that same role is fulfilled by books, by cinema. And that
kind of
stuff. So then in that case, it's the same world. But anyways, that's my thing. If they redid it, I mean, if Soul's not involved, you know, it's not a published game in this game world. So it would be, I think, in a different form and, you know, which it could be fine, but I don't know that we'd learn more about this version in this, but in the role-playing game that they're coming out with, I hope so.
Yeah, it'd almost have to be like a, like an American Horror Story type deal, you know, like every season is like truly unique, even though there might be a couple hidden threads that the fans could pick out to tie them together, you know, as a universe or something, but it would be interesting, you know. I'm definitely would keep my eyes out. You know, I think if anybody were like, hey, you know, Gillen and Hans just announced a Die to it, like,
oh, it's going to my box, 100%. It's going to my box.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
yeah. It's immediate.
Pre-order that one 6 months out.
Like, I'm going to add it tomorrow just in case it ever happens.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I don't think they're making that. Well, just in case.
Chris, I don't know if you have any more to add here, or Alex, do you have any more you'd really like to say?
Oh man, we covered a lot of stuff and then some about it, but spoiled a bit. If anybody pushed through, it's still worth a read
for sure.
We couldn't begin to cover the breadth of subjects that they touch on in this book, and it's a game changer. And you know, you feel your brain, you feel your the dimensions of your brain when you finish this book, like. expanding, you know, so go read it, people.
For sure. Well, thanks for coming on, buddy. We really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, my friends.
It will definitely not be the last time.
Yeah, man. Thank you.
But just to wrap up here, you know, Kieran Gillen's Die was nothing short of a natural 20, with every issue keeping us engaged and wanting more. From start to finish, it took us on an epic adventure that followed relatable characters as they escaped the dark and dangerous world of Die. Be sure to hit Kyle and I up on the GK, IG, or Facebook accounts to share your thoughts about this gem from Image Comics. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this discussion, go ahead and smash the subscribe button so you never miss a chapter of Geek Ketchup, and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Also, be sure to follow GK on social media. You can find links to all of our accounts on the show notes below and on our website, geekketchuppodcast.com. There's even links to our merch store and Patreon if you'd like to support the show. But as always, remember to stay saucy, you nerds.